Hello, welcome again to the Rotten Horror Picture Show, the horror movie podcast. We talk about films off the Rotten Tomatoes 200 Best Horror Movies of All Time list. My name is Clay. With me, as always, is Amanda. How are you doing, Amanda?
I'm good. I'm here with all my negative energy.
What else is new?
You know, just trying to feed a demon.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We are talking about Paranorman, the 2012 CGI animated children's film about, I'm going to say, a small dead boy.
I don't know, because I've never seen it.
Neither have I.
I am an adult.
I put away childish things,
yes.
Like that quote.
Yes.
That I don't know. Because it wasn't in a comic book. No, today we are talking about a movie that scared me much more than it probably should have.
Hmm.
Paranormal Activity from 2007.
You and many other people.
Yeah. It is number 151 on our list. This I'm glad we're doing this because I... have we done a... we've done Rec, which is a found footage. I'm interested to hear your take on this style of movie.
Sure.
Because it feels like a lot of people don't like it. Because this has a 82% Rotten Tomatoes score, 57% audience score.
Huh.
So.
Controversial.
A lot of people are wrong.
In which direction, though?
Hey, I don't, you know, make... I don't judge.
So you could be disparaging either side of the argument.
Yeah, and I hope to do so.
Good.
But I will judge you if you don't head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile.
Good segue.
Sign up for our Patreon, where you can follow Amanda and I as we cover this year sequels. Starting in January with Gremlins 2. And in that episode, we will be finalizing our list for the year. There's I don't know if you knew this about horror movies. There are a lot of sequels.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
Including...
Who would have thought?
In the Paranormal Activity series.
Yeah, aren't there like 8?
Look at that. Segue in, segue out. Slick.
A professional podcaster here.
Have you gotten Bombas yet?
You almost got me. I almost thought you were asking me a sincere question.
No, I would never.
No.
Here's a sincere question. Had you seen this before?
Yes, I had a couple times.
Did you see it in the theater?
No, I don't think so. Full disclosure, this came out when I was in college, and I do remember either watching it in a dorm room or someone's apartment and falling asleep.
Sure, I can see that.
I think that was my first time trying to watch this movie.
I did say 2007 because that's what it says on IMDb, but this movie was actually shot in, I believe, 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Or 2006, and not released until 2009.
Yeah,
because I was thinking, wait a minute, I saw this in the theater with my girlfriend at the time, and we didn't start dating until 2009. How could this come out in 2007? The answer is it didn't.
Time travel.
And you said you had watched it. You watched it during COVID. You think?
Yeah, it was definitely one of those. I am trapped in my house. Let's watch a movie about people being. Lightly trapped in their house. I mean, no, they're technically not, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
They
definitely come up with every possible, not every possible, but like a tenuous reason why they cannot leave the house.
They come up with a very clear rationale for why leaving the house doesn't solve anything.
Yes.
And so what's the point?
Yeah.
Might as well just stay in your house.
Yeah. I saw one person talking about this saying like, I wish they had left the house because that would have been interesting. And it's one of those, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, okay, there's a million things they could have done.
Yeah, would have made it a different movie, right?
Yeah.
So you saw this in theaters?
I did. This inadvertently ended up being one of the scariest movies I've ever seen. helped... Very much so by my lovely wife, who doesn't love these movies.
No.
I'm shocked, actually, in retrospect now, that she actually went to see it with me.
Oh, almost like she likes you.
Yeah, she did bring a safety hat with her so that she could wear to feel powerful.
To feel powerful?
So, just, I just want to clarify something. My wife is an adult. I did not marry a child.
And she was an adult when you started dating her.
Yeah.
I mean, you both were. Yes. You weren't like high school sweethearts who started dating when you were 14.
Depends what state you're in, sweetheart.
Ew.
No, I know. That was gross. I apologize. No. Yeah. She just doesn't. She doesn't love. I actually have two great paranormal
wives.
Yeah,
and
not
I was
yet.
Like, wait, what?
Working on it. I have two great paranormal activity stories involving my wife. The first one, she very bravely went to see this movie with me, and I think this must have been very early into when we started dating. And so I don't know if I had ever watched a horror movie with her before.
Oh,
and boy. It really makes the experience that much better.
Yeah.
Because the thing that... So, she's not going to listen to this. one of the things that I love about my wife is that she's afraid of balloon animals. I'm sorry, not balloon animals. Just balloons in general.
Oh, so balloon animals, but also all balloons.
Under the umbrella.
Okay.
But the reason she's afraid of balloons is because she... of the inherent tension of blowing up a balloon.
This is such an anxiety-fueled anxiety person fear. Yeah.
Yeah. And then eventually it might pop.
Yeah, it might just pop.
And so that's basically what this movie is.
Yeah, it is.
And so as we're watching this movie, as things start to, they start to go into the
tension, the night starts tension. To ratchet. Yeah.
And I can literally feel her energy just coiling like a spring in the seat next to me, which is then affecting me.
Yes.
And making the movie work more on me than it would have otherwise.
I love that.
And it was great. It made it was like, adding a little bit of extra. It was like seeing it in 4D.
See, you also are an empathetic person.
You have
empathy towards people around you. So she's getting more tense and more. So it's making you more tense and all that. I have sat next to your wife in the movie theater for a horror movie, and I laughed and laughed and laughed hysterically at her terror.
Yeah.
It's the difference between you and I.
Yeah. The second paranormal activity related story, when the second one came out, we watched it at our friend's house, and for some reason she agreed to watch it.
I was going to say, you got her to watch the second one too?
Yeah. And there's this great moment in the movie where all of the cabinets and pots and pans kind of explode off the wall. And so the lead up to that obviously is a very drawn out silence of just building wait, when's it gonna happen and so we get to that scene and we're watching the movie and it's going and then before anything happens she screams like a lot and loud.
Yeah.
Sorry, my headphones just fell off.
You scared the headphones off your own head.
I did. And like
the tension alone just caused her
and
to erupt.
Myself and my friend turning to see what happened to her actually made us miss what happened in the movie. So it was pretty good. It was a very enhanced experience.
Immersive.
Yeah. But I will say, wife aside, these movies work on me. And that's something I do want to get into, because I feel like that's the thing with this franchise is, if it works on you, it really works. But if you don't have time for this, if it doesn't work on you, then it's just garbage.
Yeah.
But with that in mind, we're going to take a break, play the trailer, and then come back and talk about it.
High def camera on my girlfriend Katie. She thinks there's something in the house. I don't know.
You believe me, right?
I think we're gonna have a very interesting time capturing whatever paranormal phenomena is occurring or is not occurring.
Windows are locked, doors are locked, alarm is on.
Hearing a weird sound.
Something's here. I feel it breathing on me.
footsteps in, but there's no footsteps out.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
If you do try to play games with it, that's inviting it in.
Jesus, looks like something bit you.
It's not the house, it's me.
You cannot run from this, it will follow you.
Are you in control?
You're not in control.
What's happening to me?
This thing left a message.
If it's not a ghost, what is it?
Okay. Paranormal Activity, written and directed by Oren Peli, starring Katie Featherston, Mika Sloat, and that's about it.
Yep.
A couple other people, but, you know.
That's pretty much the important ones.
Yeah. Amanda, what happens in Paranormal Activity?
Soon after moving into a suburban tract home, Katie and Mika become increasingly disturbed by what appears to be a supernatural presence. Hoping to capture evidence of it on film, they set up a video camera in the house, but are not prepared for the terrifying events that follow.
When is anyone ever prepared for terrifying events?
I mean, be less terrifying if you were prepared.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, Clay, some things you'll find in Paranormal Activity include extremely mid-aughts everything.
Yeah, it's a bit of a time capsule in that way.
Truly. It is one of, in my opinion, the most accurate time capsules because it's not filtered through the Hollywood lens of like how people were dressing and what houses looked like.
Yeah.
It's remarkable how quickly just looking at this movie makes me feel like it is 2005.
Yeah. And my favorite detail in this movie, actually, I think, is the exorcism website that they go to.
Yes.
Because, like,
it's like a black background with neon green writing.
Yeah, it's like it doesn't have one of
this
those
is an Angel Fire website.
One of those construction GIFs on it.
Yeah,
under construction, but it may as well have. But it's like I'm sure you probably have as well.
Oh,
but
yeah,
you start digging on the internet, you end up finding a site like that. Mm-hmm. Those sites are fucking scary.
Yeah,
because you don't know who made them.
Yep.
They're janky enough to feel like it's made by an insane person.
Yep.
But the story that they're telling you is like just plausible enough to believe it. Like I remember when I was in college, I had to do some research on like serial killers or something for a paper. I don't remember what I was doing, but I couldn't do it because like this was before Wikipedia. And so the only thing out there were these types of websites.
Right. And it's all people who aren't really, I mean, I'm sure there were some sites doing a more academic endeavor, but a lot of them are just like fans, like serial killer groupies,
right,
who are impassioned enough to independently build a website about, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer or whoever you were researching.
You love Charles Manson so much you learned to code.
I guarantee you those people exist.
Oh, definitely.
1,000%.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's that much creepier when you're reading about torsos in the sink from a source that you can't guarantee doesn't have a torso in
and
their own
for
sink.
For some reason, everything feels like really truthful. Like all the details feel really exact and clear. And you're kind of like, wait, how would you know this?
Yes.
Oh, the old internet.
Oh, boy.
We all miss it.
You know, the other thing I was thinking about just now, as you were saying that it's the mid-aughts, etc. This is kind of a bit of a good time capsule movie, even though it comes out in 2000, it was made in 2005, comes out in 2009, which is when the first iPhone comes out. And after the iPhone comes out, everything changes.
Yes.
As far as having a home video recorder.
I do want to talk a little bit about that because I think it helps set the scene for this movie very, very well. Well, you'll also find someone who puts on deodorant before bed.
I didn't notice that.
I did.
But I think that's a very considerate move.
For some reason, it strikes me as like unhealthy.
It does feel like something you do.
Aren't you also
do...
just gonna like smear it on your sheets and stuff?
It does feel like something you do early in a relationship.
Right. Not like we've been together for years and we bought a house together.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Feel like you're past that point. Mm-hmm. A mass market magic book from Borders Bookstore. I can imagine.
I loved that.
Maybe Walden Books.
I loved that book. I have read that book.
Yeah, it's real.
I don't know if I've read that specific one, but
yeah.
I have definitely gone into Barnes & Noble with no plan.
Found the occult section
and went to town. Start just grazing through that. Mm-hmm. I was saying last night, the only thing that would have made it better is if there was one of those gigantic Barnes & Noble 50% off stickers on
yes,
the front.
Yes,
because like, you know, you bought it next to like a book that's just about old guns.
Yeah, it's between that and Martha Stewart's newest cookbook or whatever.
Yeah, or like an oversized book about Mooka or something.
Mooka?
Is that not an artist?
I have no idea who that is.
I'm probably going to cut that out because I don't want to sound like an asshole.
I don't know what it is. I could be the one who sounds like an asshole. Are we pausing to look up Mooka?
Yeah, Alphonse Mook. Okay. No, I know what I'm talking about. I went to art school.
I said I was the one who didn't know.
I know, but it made me second guess myself.
Now you're leaving this in because you're correct.
Exactly. You think I'd cut something where I'm correct?
Anyway, other things you'll find in Paranormal Activity include a hilariously satanic Ouija board or the best looking fucking Ouija board Clay has ever seen.
No, that's the line.
Oh.
It from the movie. That's
really?
What, yeah, because she says something like, you told me you wouldn't buy a Ouija board, and here you are with the best looking fucking Ouija board I've ever
seen. I thought that was you.
No.
I thought you were like, I fucking love this satanic Ouija board.
Nice craftsmanship.
Nice. Love the upside down pentagram.
Yeah.
A surprisingly well-contained house fire.
Yeah.
It just singes the Ouija board. Mm. It doesn't even touch the coffee table.
And is not really reacted to by the homeowners who have this on video.
No.
The way I think any normal person would react to watching spontaneous combustion in their living room.
Yes, on a Ouija board.
Yeah.
Yeah. Monty Python quotes.
Yep.
Yep.
Good old days.
Classic mid-2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's still quoting Holy Grail at
what
each other.
What is your favorite color?
Mm-hmm. Et cetera, et cetera.
What is the airspeed velocity of a something swallow? I can't remember.
African.
African swallow?
I think it's African. Anyway, nerd corner's over. And finally,
it could grip it by the husk.
Cross burning to spite the devil.
Yeah. But he likes that, though.
That's why it's dumb that Mika does it.
Yeah.
Takes the cross away from her and throws it in the fireplace.
Yeah, you would think maybe then the demon would be like, this guy's cool.
Maybe
I don't do this anymore.
Let's not kill him.
Yeah. So, Paranormal Activity.
Yes.
This is in the pocket of what I guess you could call like the second wave of found footage. Well, I don't really know because Blair Witch comes out in the late 90s.
1999.
And I feel like the found footage thing doesn't happen immediately. It kind of comes a little bit after. But once that hits, it's like fucking everything.
Yes.
Like there was even, as we've talked about on Patreon, there was even a point where when they were making a sequel to Halloween, one of the ideas was, what if we do it as a found footage movie? I believe they also had that idea for Friday the 13th as well.
Yeah.
And thankfully, they didn't do
it. One of the Halloween sequels isn't exactly found footage, but they do have them like reality TV running around
yes,
with cameras.
They do have reality TV.
A similar vibe of that sort of DIY.
Yeah. They did do a found footage Hellraiser movie.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
But unfortunately for Hellraiser, almost all of those movies are bad. But yeah, so this comes out right around the same pocket as like Cloverfield and Diary of the Dead. And Wreck comes out around this time. This has definitely turned into a genre.
Yes.
This is, I would say this is closer to a Blair Witch type thing,
mm-hmm.
not only in the way that it was produced, but also in kind of the way that it was marketed. Because this is, this one, they're still not as forcefully as Blair Witch, mm-hmm. but they're still trying to pass this off as a true story.
Mm-hmm.
Where they have that nice opening title card where it's the same, almost the same title card that they have at the beginning of The Wicker Man, which I've always found to be baffling.
Yes, where it's like our gratitude to Lord Summerisle. Yeah. And in this, it's like, we would like to thank the families of Katie and mm-hmm. Mika and also the San Diego police.
Right.
Okay.
For that one detective being like, you got to see this video.
Weird choice, but all right.
Why would Lord Summerisle give them permission to shoot this movie that presents Lord Summerisle as a murderous pagan? Anyway, wrong, different movie.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that's so impressive about this is how it's really, it goes through a lot of the classic haunted house tropes,
mm-hmm.
but it does them real fast. So like where the psychic showing up mm-hmm. is usually the thing they do like around the halfway point or something.
Mm-hmm.
They get the psychic like 5 minutes into this movie.
Yeah, he's
in and out.
Yeah.
He's basically there to be like, you need to get out of this house. It's my favorite movie psychic I think I've seen in a while, because he comes in and he's talking very confidently and professionally. And then eventually he's like, oh, this is not a ghost. I can't. This is above my pay grade. I need to go
now. I need to leave this house right now.
Only trumped by his second appearance in the movie when he comes back and he's like, nope.
Yeah. Which is how my husband reacted when he walked into the living room and saw this movie on the TV.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He just said, no way, and walked out of the room.
Now, did he know? You said he came in, he took one look at the TV and he left, right?
Yes.
Did he know what it was because it was the bedroom shot?
I think so.
Because I think that shot is the genius of this movie.
Yeah.
Because, and that shot is what gets to me. That's the thing that gets, and I've talked about this before. I talked about it at length when we did The Innkeepers.
Mm-hmm.
But that shot in the bedroom mm-hmm. where you've got the Katie and Mika in the foreground and then an open door that mm-hmm. lets you see all the way down the dark hallway.
Yes.
That is just inviting you to look deeper and deeper and deeper and
looking
for something to happen.
Yeah.
Especially with the way they start to kick this stuff off by having like little subtle things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of the lights way down there will go on and off once.
Yeah.
So it immediately hooks you into using your own imagination into what could be. And this is also, I know I've talked about this before too, but it's the perfect example of why it's scarier to, if you have a scene in a movie where someone's going into a room,
mm-hmm.
it's scarier to go in with them, not have the camera inside the room.
To approach the open door rather than already be in the room looking out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like I was a little surprised that they didn't do this way, because like when he's going up into the attic,
mm-hmm.
I thought he was just gonna put the camera up there, because like that in this sort of movie is the ultimate, like they have taken your agency as a viewer away completely, and they are pushing you into the scary thing,
right. And I feel like I wish I could remember off the top of my head, but I feel like there is a movie where they do that. There's at least one I think we've even covered.
Is it Host? They might do it in Host.
I think it is Host. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. Where it's like the camera gets put up there and you, the viewer, see something before the people in the movie see it. But I like that in this one, it goes with him.
Yeah.
And the only thing up there is that photo.
Yeah.
It's not like a monster jump scare. Yeah.
But yeah, I really liked this.
Mm-hmm.
I was very surprised at how scary it was. It's the classic haunted house knocking on the walls and doors moving and stuff in most movies, I feel like it's kind of hokey now. But in something like this, I think because the presentation of it is quote unquote real world. It feels more effective. And also, after we saw this movie the first time, we went back to my wife's place. And that night, I'm laying in bed like awake because I go to bed much later than she does. And so it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. And this house is a big house. It's a, at the time she had like five roommates. It's a big Victorian, old Victorian house. And I'm laying there trying to sleep, but still awake. And whole house is dark. Whole house is quiet. And then I hear footsteps come up the stairs and stop directly in front of her bedroom door. And I'm like, my eyes are wide. Trying to figure out what is going on. And then they continued up the next flight of stairs. Now, what probably happened was someone came up the stairs and stopped to look at their phone or something. But as far as my mind was concerned,
someone is standing outside the door.
The ghost was there.
Yeah.
So it got me. And I mean, this kind of stuff, even to this day, if it catches me on the right night where I'm home alone, it freaks me out a little bit.
I think this movie would have been more effective for me if it hadn't been so long, like rewatching it. In college, again, I like fell asleep. But rewatching it, I think it's just been too long since I lived in a house. Like a full, like single family.
Right, because you live on the street now, right?
Yeah, I live in a cardboard box with the raccoons in a trash area next to an apartment building.
I wouldn't call it a trash area.
I mean, it's more than just a couple cans. It's a
Got some space.
But I haven't lived in a single family house in a really long time. And so I am used to hearing other people and noises all the time. Like through the walls, in the hallway, whatever. So I think it takes, when you live in that kind of environment long enough, it takes some of the scariness away from that. And it's, you have to sort of remind yourself and put yourself back in the headspace of, if you live in a single family home that's a detached home, you're not expecting to hear things like knocking and footsteps in the building with you while you're asleep and you know your whole family is asleep.
I heard one last night. I went to bed really late, and as I was starting to fall asleep, something upstairs in the unit upstairs, like really heavy and loud, fell on the floor.
This did just remind me that a couple weeks ago, Greg and I were both, we didn't say anything to each other in the night, but the next morning when we woke up, we woke up and he said something to me like, man, I heard a man's voice last night, and it was so loud and like clear. It was like, kind of made me think someone was in the apartment. And I said, that's really weird, because I woke up and because I heard a man's voice. It sounded like it was in the hallway, off of our bedroom. And I heard a man say hello.
Oh, I just got chills now.
We were both like, huh, okay, well, old building, thin walls, moving on.
I hope so. See, because that's the thing, right? I think that's why this movie works on me, because I don't know if I believe in ghosts, right? But I don't think that I entirely disbelieve in ghosts. And I think what this movie does a good job of showing is, if you can even entertain the possibility, one of the things that comes along with that is there is nothing you can do to stop them. That's, I've always like been of two minds where it's like, I kind of would like to see a ghost, but I also know that it would break my brain and like my hair would go white.
Ruin you forever.
Yeah. And it's because it's like, oh, that'd be really interesting to see. But at the same time, what do I do now? Like now I know.
Have to carry on and pretend like things are normal.
Yeah. They're here all the time.
Yeah. And you can't do anything about it.
No.
Nope.
It's scary.
So in this movie, I really like the way it plays with those kind of things that do happen to people in real life. Like, who hasn't woken up in the middle of the night being like, oh, I think I heard something. That was weird. Right, yeah. You know, the house creaks or there's just something going on outside, whatever. We've all had those moments. And what this movie does really well is it starts out with things being so small.
Mm.
And there's like a humming noise that happens when there's like demonic activity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very subtle. And what it makes you do is it makes you listen really, really hard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that same thing you were talking about, where visually, by setting up the camera in the corner of the bedroom with the bed and the couple on the sleeping in the bed in the foreground, and then the open door to the rest of the house kind of to one side, you spend your whole time either unable to look away from peering through that door or avoiding that door at all costs, depending on what kind of horror movie watcher you are. And I think the sound does the same thing, where there's no soundtrack, there's no creepy music, there's no stingers or anything at any point. But there is this like little almost electrical hum right before things start happening, and then it fades off afterwards. And it makes you really lean in and listen hard.
Yeah.
So then when something does happen, like there's a bang downstairs or door creaks open, you're already so like in tune that it feels louder and it has more of an impact on you without it needing to be like a overproduced jump scare.
Yeah, they do that in The Innkeepers too. We talked about that because there's this scene where she's listening to the recording.
Yes.
And she's just turning the volume up and the ambient sound is just getting louder.
Yeah, like a little crackle.
Yeah, which is causing you to
peer
into the darkness with your ears, so to speak. Yeah, it's great. It's great, great manipulation.
Yeah.
How do you feel about these characters?
I hate Mika. I think he's easy to hate.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of by necessity, right? Like you need these two characters to be in opposition to one another.
Yeah.
Because they're the only two people on screen for 95% of this movie. So if they were getting along in perfect harmony, there'd be less kind of a tension. It wouldn't propel the story forward as much. So you need one of them to say, I don't like this. I don't like what we're doing. I think we should leave this alone. You need the other one to keep pushing it.
Right.
And that's what Mika does. It's kind of the purpose he serves. I also think in the time period when this movie came out, his treatment of Katie is pretty believable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. That's sort of like, oh, come on, babe. Why are you being so uptight? Don't be such a bitch. Like,
he definitely seems like someone who has purchased a Girls Gone Wild videotape.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. He really does. He has like a certain, like, yeah, there's a, not to skip around too much, but one of the things I like about them bringing in the psychic so early is that he gives a good reason for them to do some exposition talk. Like,
yeah,
he asks them, how's your relationship? How long have you been together? How, you know, what do you do for work? How's your health? Like, he kind of gets these big questions that the audience might have about this. Like, well, what is she just crazy? You know, or how did they afford this gigantic house? Like, oh, well, he's a day trader. And I'm like, oh, fucking course he is.
What's really, I don't know, I guess fortunate or unfortunate, depending on how you look at it, is if he had survived, he probably would have lost all of his money in the stock market crash.
Yeah, which, yeah, like a year from.
Yeah.
This movie should also, you know, show this to all of Gen Z and be like, see, you don't want a house.
They should how come they don't cut this into The Big Short and talk about, like, on top of everything else, there's an uptick in demon infestations.
Demons murdering day traders.
Yeah.
No, for the characters, I have a lot of sympathy for Katie as an English major with a
that's right. Yeah, it was,
with night terrors.
Yeah, shockingly relatable for you.
Yeah, it's sort of like, oh man, that sucks. Sorry, you're gonna get possessed by a demon and kill everyone you love. I think for the fact that these are unknowns, the actors, I think they do a pretty good job.
Yeah, I think so, too.
You know, I think they feel fairly real. I think they have decent chemistry with one another, which is impressive, because I get the sense that this movie was shot kind of fly by night. Like, let's get this done as quick as we can.
Yeah. Shot it for $15,000.
Jesus. That's wild.
At the director's house, which he...
Oh, funny.
Which he remodeled in order to be able to shoot it the way he wanted to.
Wow. I have so many thoughts, though. About yeah. that being is actually... Maybe that's why it feels so authentically mid-2000s to me.
Yeah, well, honestly, house. It's kind of brilliant because now you can write off all of your home improvements as a business expense. Ooh, I should think... how could I do that?
But one thing I like, and I think it works... it works in the actor's favor. It works in the character's favor. Is the general conceit of this movie in the time period it was shot in...
Mm-hmm.
Giving him a home video camera, which used to be a kind of piece of luxury equipment.
Sure.
I know a lot of families had them, but not most. You know, it was not unheard of, but it was definitely not like fully common.
Yeah.
And I think that works out well because it sets up a dichotomy between the two of them where he's like, there is a modern technological solution to mm-hmm. our problems, and I'm just gonna kind of buy my way out of this. I'm gonna purchase the right equipment, and we're gonna do things, we're gonna document things, and then we'll be able to dispel whatever's happening here.
Yeah.
It also explains why there are times when they might come across as awkward.
Mm-hmm.
Because in 2005 people weren't used to being recorded all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even think phones really had good cameras at that
not
point.
Really, no.
Like, you were not constantly like recording yourself or your friends or even taking like selfies, really.
Yeah.
Like,
because what do you do with the photo? You can't get it off your phone.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'd have to like flip the camera around and just sort of hit it and guess.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like you didn't, or you use the mirror, do the mirror selfies. Mm-hmm. Like you didn't have the front facing camera.
The MySpace special.
Exactly. Exactly. Up, yeah.
Angled down so you can suck it in and no one can tell.
Yep. Yep. Pucker your lips. The whole nine yards. But I think it means that the sort of home video found footage quality of this explains away why there are times when they as a couple might seem stilted mm-hmm. or like they're talking kind of awkwardly to one another, and you can just write it off as like, yeah, I don't know, she feels weird that he's recording her all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. I also, one of the things that I think they do pretty well is they get around the usual complaint that people lodge at these sorts of movies, which mm-hmm. is, why is there someone always filming with a camera?
Mm-hmm.
By having it in one place and also making the tripod an important part of the filming process,
mm-hmm.
it allows them to do the handheld thing, but mm-hmm. also do things independent of the camera, but still record it and not have
yeah.
it feel weird. But I also think, you know, to your point, I think it makes sense because Mika clearly likes
yeah.
filming Katie. Yeah.
Yes.
Because it's, you know, it's a novel thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't feel really forced to me that he's
following her around yeah, all the time with it.
Or
yeah.
documenting. The only thing that's a little bit, you know, could go either way depending on how much suspension of disbelief you want to give it,
mm.
is when you see the nighttime filming
mm-hmm.
and then in the next day they film themselves watching it on the computer.
Yeah.
Because you have to see that scene.
You have to see them reacting
to that.
But
in
yeah.
real life, I don't know necessarily that you would do that.
I don't know, but you can kind of write a lot of it off to however Mika, the character, might handle this
yeah.
right. Like I think his liking the camera is a really big through line
mm-hmm.
through this whole movie, where it starts off as it is this kind of like fun new toy he got
yeah.
and he wants
yeah.
to play with it, and he likes filming her, and he kind of gets off on the idea of like filming her whether she likes it or not mm-hmm. in like a teasing way. He even tries to like convince her to have sex with the camera
mm-hmm,
on.
Mm-hmm.
I
was surprised that he waited as long as he did to suggest that.
Well,
I assumed that would be the first thing.
He tries to trick her into it.
Yes.
And then she yells at him about it, and mm-hmm. then it seems like they still have sex.
Mm-hmm.
But it starts as this sort of like fun, playful thing he's doing, and he's also using it a little bit to prove a point of he's not fully convinced, right? When this movie starts, he's not fully convinced that she's being haunted by something.
Right.
And he's going to use this piece of technology, which is to him going to give real proof one way or another. And it's this sort of arbiter of the truth and the arbiter of reality more than her actual experience is. Mm-hmm. And it goes very quickly from being this like fun toy to being something he's using to prop himself up to get through this experience.
Right.
Once things start feeling a little too real, it and I think this happens in the Blair Witch Project too, and probably in other found footage movies, and I do kind of get it, where it becomes something that filters reality for you.
Yeah.
And it feels safer. It feels safer to be looking at whatever's happening through the camera mm-hmm. rather than directly experiencing it without that mediating force in between.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of explains away a lot of the question that people might have after a point in this movie, which is why do they keep filming?
Yeah, the one time that I think is deep enough into the movie that you're kind of not really thinking about that stuff anymore, but yeah. So stands out to me as like a questionable one yeah. is when she gets up and leaves the house and goes to sit outside, and he wakes up and immediately grabs the camera to go look for her instead of going to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the fact that he grabs the camera to go downstairs to look for her, then takes the camera outside. I could go either way with it. Cause it's like on the one hand, yeah, he is still trying to document the strange happenings.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if you were that concerned, I don't know. I feel like you would find her first.
Yeah, I think at that point in the movie he's not as concerned as like you or I might be.
Yeah.
I think Mika's a little bit of a jerk on purpose. Like I think that character has to be that way for this to go on as long as it does, right? Because I think a lot of other people would have at that after a point been like, I don't care if the psychic says leaving the house won't help. We've got to try it. We got to get out of here. I don't want to see you suffer like this anymore. I think Mika's attachment to somehow like solving this or controlling it or proving that he has power or control in the situation trumps his love for Katie after a point. The one that really stands out to me is actually way later in the movie than that even. And it's the one where they've had a fight. We're kind of closing in on the last like night or two. And they've had a fight where she was trying to study and is like, can you just quit it with the camera? Mm-hmm. Can you leave me alone for 5 fucking minutes? And she starts storming upstairs. And he says to her, I didn't bring that thing into our house. You did.
Yeah.
And she gets really upset. And the camera cuts out after they yell at each other for a minute. And when it turns back on, she is like fully on the floor in the fetal position, just absolutely sobbing.
Mm-hmm.
And he turns the camera on. And then he goes to comfort her and says, it's not your fault. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. But he turns the camera on first.
Right.
And that's the one where I'm like, at that point, I think she's been like physically attacked by this thing. You know what I mean? Yep. Just like so much else has happened that's the point at which I realize, I think the viewer kind of has to realize that whatever's going on with Mika, it's about more than like he's reacting to things because there's something going on within himself where he feels like he needs to like prove he can beat this thing.
Right.
For some reason. I don't know if it's like an insecurity thing or if he just truly does not want to believe in the supernatural aspect of it.
Yeah.
Even this deep in. But whatever's going on with him, he's willing to just be like, you know, me and my camera are more important than my girlfriend having a nervous breakdown on the floor.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's trying to prove it to her too. And I don't even know if I don't think I mean that in like a jerky kind of way. Maybe at this point in the movie a little bit, but yeah. I think ultimately he's dealing with the being a skeptic.
Yeah.
But also wanting to be able to show her that he has solved this problem.
Yeah, I think he goes on quite a journey. Like I think he kind of gets like more and more of a jerk around stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is he at the beginning of the movie, he has this certain amount of smugness.
Yes.
Toward what's happening.
Yes.
And then as it goes on, it becomes clearer and clearer that he doesn't know what's happening.
Yeah.
And that's what makes him angry.
Yeah. And I think he also gets scared. Right.
Yeah,
and I think
of course,
his reaction to being that angry and that afraid and not able to do anything about it is he leans harder on the camera. He leans harder on the technology. And it's a coping mechanism after a point. And so as much as he's a jerk, he's also clearly like being put through the ringer at the same time. So this in the movie, you understand that he'll do or say things that are like bad boyfriend behavior, obviously, but they are both of them getting put under increasing levels of pressure as it gets harder and harder to deny that something supernatural is happening.
Yeah.
And they're being given no other solutions. Like they try everything and they even resort to calling the demonologist who's like, sorry, I'm out of town. I'll be back in like 5 days.
Yeah.
You'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they stick it out as long as they do. Because a couple things, like the shadow on the door, my brain can kind of like go, okay, that's a little weird.
Yeah.
The moving of the bed sheets, okay, that's a little weird. Baby powder demon footsteps on the floor is where I draw the line.
Her getting physically pulled out of the room by her leg by an invisible force.
They should never have even gotten to that point. The second you have a video
of
demon footsteps coming into your bedroom, he is a better man than I am because there's a strong chance I would have been like, listen, this has been fun. I do care about you, but I need to leave.
Yep.
You can have the house.
Would you even want to stay or would you? I don't know. I'm just thinking like even if she had been like, no, I'll leave. I feel like I would be like, I also want to leave.
Yeah. Fuck
like,
the house,
man. I
don't
want to be in this house anymore.
Well, you know, I do think I was kind of poo-pooing it previously.
Yeah.
The fact that they don't at least try to leave the house is, it's one of those things where I understand it because in the context of the piece of art you're making, you can only do so much.
Yeah.
But to have that not even try to spend a night at a hotel or something.
Yeah.
Because that would, at the very least, I'd be like, you know what? Let's give it a shot. Let's see what happens.
Right. Yeah. The worst case scenario is the same shit is happening just in a different room.
Yeah. And then more people can see it.
Yeah.
And then I will be scared with them. Generally, I think this movie is the ghost stuff that they're doing is pretty. I think it works on me because the level is restrained enough for the most part.
Mm hmm.
That it is believable.
Yeah.
In quotes, however you want to.
Yeah.
The one thing that loses me, and I guess they do explain this in the next movie. I'm going to say they didn't know this was the answer at the time when they shot this one. The one thing that I don't like is the picture in the attic, the burned picture in the attic. Because like everything else is so abstract and ethereal and supernatural. Finding a picture of you as a child at your old house that's been burned in the attic, I don't know, that feels too movie-ish to me. That feels like The Conjuring.
Okay. I can see that. I kind of like it.
Yeah.
Because her whole point is that the house she had been living in when that photo was taken was burned down and her family lost everything. So she thinks that photo should not exist. Like it should
sure.
It should have been burned in the house fire. How did it get here?
Yeah, I just
and I do like there's a little detail where he says to her later on it was above our bedroom.
Right.
Like where it was positioned in the attic. And I don't know, I kind of like that.
That's creepy.
Yeah.
But I have trouble thinking that the ghost has like a photo album that he, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's so, everything is so super otherworldly.
Yeah.
The fact that the ghost would whip out a photograph or like manifest, I don't know. It just seems a little too I don't even know what the word I'm looking for is, but it feels more horror fiction-y.
I mean, he is lighting Ouija boards on fire, which feels pretty.
I don't mind.
See that those things feel kind of connected to me though.
Yeah,
like I don't know, in terms of like physical manifestations, right? Of this demon that's tormenting this couple. Like everything else, there's a level of like plausible deniability in it until you get to things like the Ouija board being on fire, the footsteps, and the photo. Those are like the first few things where it's like, oh, this demon is not just like knocking on cabinets or whatever. It's starting to have like a physical effect on the world around them.
Yeah. Again, talking about that element just within the bounds of this movie, it doesn't really work for me. But when they come back to it in the second one, it actually does. It works a lot better because if I remember correctly, as my memory was jogged by that video we watched before we started, what happens in the second one is it's kind of a prequel to, and deals mostly with Katie's sister, who has a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then this demon is harassing her child.
Mm-hmm.
And so what she does is she basically casts a spell or whatever to hoist the demon onto her sister.
Oh, wow.
And if I remember correctly, her sister is the one who burns the photo and puts it in the attic. So like once you know that, it's like, okay that makes fine.
Right. So it's part of a ritual someone did to sort of foist this demon off.
Yeah, foist. That's the word I'm looking for, not hoist.
You can hoist the demon too, I guess.
Yeah. Can you be foist by your own petard? What is a petard?
We're getting off topic. I don't know.
No?
I have no idea.
All right. Whatever. But yeah, like in that context, I think it's more interesting, but just in the context of this where it's so if what they were trying to go for was something like Hereditary, where you go into the attic and like, oh shit, someone's been doing stuff up here. I don't think they do enough to get to that.
I agree.
Just having the photo is too, I don't know, like if it was more indicative of some sort of ritual.
Yeah.
Or they did something that was more supernatural, then I feel like I would be better. I'd have fewer problems with it.
Sure. I can see that. I mean, I still think it works more for me than it does for you, but I understand where you're coming from on it.
Yeah. It is also interesting to think about, you know, the found footage thing. As I was saying before, one of the biggest complaints from a lot of people is like, oh, well, nobody would ever keep recording in these situations.
Yeah.
20 years on, we know that to be completely untrue because
everyone
it is the first thing everyone does before anything else.
Yeah,
pull out the phone.
Even when there's something really horrific happening, people will pull
there's something horrific
people
happening.
People will pull out their phone and start recording before they call 911.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. I do just want to, there's one bit in the demon haunting, like of all the demon bits that I really like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when shit starts happening during the daytime. So it's later in the movie. And I think the demon has attacked the picture on the wall of them. There's all that going on. And they're standing in the hallway. And Mika has the camera, as he usually does. And he's facing Katie. And she looks super freaked out. And she's kind of looking off to the side a little bit. And she says to him, I can feel it breathing on me. And there's a very soft noise. And if you look, her hair blows.
Yeah, I missed that one.
And she fucking bolts. Like, she just takes off. Like, it happens. And she clearly feels it and immediately takes the fuck off. And he's just standing there like, what the fuck just happened? And I that one really works for me. Because there's something about that idea of like, when you have long hair and somebody touches it, like even if they don't touch your skin, you feel it.
Right,
and the feeling of someone's like breath on your hair or their hand going through your hair when no one's there sounds like a nightmare to me. So like that one really works for me, and I think it
sounds like you've been to the White House.
It sounds like I've been on public transportation woman. But just I think her fear is really believable in that moment too, and I think it's very subtly done. I think it's easy to miss that moment, but if you catch it, it's really effective.
Yeah. I think the special effects in general in this are really well done.
Yeah.
Except
for the very end.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in a minute. The fact that pretty much everything happens in that one fixed camera shot makes it a lot easier to pull off some of these things that they're doing. Because most likely, so the director has actually never explained how they did any of this stuff, which I appreciate. Because I think we both ran into as we were looking up stuff, there's not a lot of information about the making of this movie.
Yeah.
There's plenty of information about the selling of the movie.
Yes, getting it into theaters, of the movie and all that marketing. Kind of stuff.
But the actual filming is not a ton out there.
Yeah, it's very like, fixed up my house and I hired these two. They had good chemistry and we filmed in like 10 days. That was it.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, but how did you?
But
many questions.
I was watching this YouTube video. I think it's from a long time ago, of someone who's like an amateur special effects artist. And he'll take an effect from a movie and be like, well, this is how I would do this. And he was doing Paranormal Activity. And basically what he was, and this might be obvious to people who know this stuff, but he was basically saying that the fixed camera allows them to very easily essentially mat out half of the room.
Yeah.
So basically they can overlay the image and have the person executing the effect.
Yeah.
Basically matted out. I'm doing a really bad job explaining this, but I'm trying to think of a good.
I get the gist.
Yeah, it's go watch the video.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fairly simple stuff. The one that's, the most impressive one is definitely the leg pull.
Yeah, that one looks really good.
The fact that she is pulled in two different directions is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just really well executed. And like it's the fact that I think it's helped by the static camera.
Yep.
The fact that it's so dark.
Yep.
The fact that the resolution's pretty low.
Yeah.
It's very forgiving when it comes to any kind of special effects and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, definitely.
So yeah, let's talk about the ending of this movie. Famously, an ending suggested by Steven Spielberg, who saw the film on a home screener and had to shut it off and finish it the next morning because it scared him so much. And he didn't like the original ending, which I believe the original ending is they both go downstairs. There's a scream. It sounds like something happens.
Yeah.
Katie comes back up. She's got blood on her. Then she sits at the foot of her bed. They do the time lapse thing. And then you hear her friend, the other girl who's in the movie, a couple scenes.
Yeah.
Show up at the house, find Mika's dead body. And then the cops come in.
Oh.
And Katie stands up and has a bloody knife in her hand, and so she gets killed by the cops.
Great. Okay.
Arguably the most realistic thing in the movie.
Yeah. Maybe a little too realistic.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a weird ending.
And yeah, that would make it extra weird to have the little, like, we want to thank the San Diego police at the beginning of the movie. Fucking murdered this girl.
I didn't even think of that. That's really funny. Nice aiming, boys.
Yep.
And then there's a second ending where I don't remember, something similar.
Doesn't she just come upstairs and slit her own throat?
Yes, she slits her own throat. There's a third ending that they never shot where she bashes Mika to death with the camera.
Oh shit! Which, I kind of love that one.
Yeah, that one's, I don't know, that's not bad. I'm
talking about hoisted by one's own petard.
Yeah. I like that you don't see what happens downstairs. Mm-hmm. That's pretty effective.
I like that too.
And I don't know how much Spielberg suggested.
Yeah.
But I think if I had to guess, at the very least, he suggested leaving it more open-ended as to, you know, what exactly happened and,
yeah,
and what happened to Katie.
Yeah.
But yeah, instead of any of that stuff, you get Katie gorilla pressing Mika into the camera.
Yep.
And then leaning over his dead body, mm-hmm, and then looking at the camera and giving a very mid-2000s CGI ghost face.
Yes. Yes.
Like, camera eat motion, and then yeah, it goes to black. And it's really, I understand what they're going for. I think they could have done something better.
Yeah.
I don't know why they chose
CGI ghost face.
CGI ghost face. Like, I think there's so many other ways you could make her look monstrous.
Yeah.
Or scary or something.
I think all you have to do is not show her face.
Yeah, that works too.
You know what I mean? Do the kind of 2000s hair over the face thing.
Yeah.
Not, you know, full the ring, but, you know, she has long, long dark hair. Uh-huh. You could very easily, in a camera shot like that, just have her tilt her head forward and have her hair kind of come down over the side, so you never really get a full look at her face.
And yeah.
You could play with that a little bit.
Yeah.
And have it just end there.
Yeah, that would work.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly why they opted for the most, even at that time, cliche monster effect you could, you know, dig up. But
yeah, I don't know. I guess it's maybe some sort of desire to have a monster, quote unquote, show up at some point in the movie.
Because
I do think that is one complaint that I see a lot, even to this day, on the internet about this movie, is that you never see the demon, you never see the monster, and therefore,
who cares?
A lot of people find that not scary, and if they think it makes it boring. I'm not saying I'm one of them. I'm just saying it's a common opinion.
Bunch of petards.
Clay, you can't say that word anymore.
We don't even know what it means.
I wish they had ended it even just on the screams and the downstairs.
That, I think, so that's the inherent problem with a movie like this, right?
Yeah.
With this kind of found footage thing where they're really going for the realistic bent. How do you get out of this?
Yeah.
Like, you could just end it like with the screams.
Yeah.
That's not very satisfying.
Yeah.
I don't mean to criticize.
No.
It's... I can see that being something where people are like, well, that's it. Yeah. Like it feels like it needs to have something.
Yeah.
Like I'm looking forward to when we finally do Blair Witch.
Yeah.
Because I have seen that movie once,
mm-hmm,
and I saw it well after the hype,
mm-hmm,
and I didn't really care for it.
Really?
The one thing that worked for me though was the ending.
Yeah.
That ending is fantastic.
It's a great ending.
And it requires no special effects.
Correct.
And it's a very satisfying ending.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they clearly figured that one out, right?
Yeah.
Like they I don't know enough about the making of that movie, if they had that end in mind, if that was the only ending, or there were other ones like there is in this one where there's a couple different options. But in Blair Witch, it feels like when you get to that ending that they were building to this the whole time without being super heavy handed about it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with this one, I think the quote-unquote realistic version of this ending is the one where you hear a lot of screaming downstairs, and then it goes silent, and the camera just like runs for a while, and then it cuts to black.
Yeah.
I think that's the quote-unquote realistic ending.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I get what you're saying, where that's not, as a film, that's not satisfying. But I do think CGI Ghostface, you know, the sort of like head tilt and creepy smile to CGI ghost face, even at the time, it would have felt hokey, you know?
Yeah.
Like even at the time that this came
out. Oh, it definitely did.
It felt hokey.
I remember feeling so deflated.
Yeah.
By that final shot.
Yeah.
Because it's like, if you can pull this movie off and then leave the audience with a final really unnerving moment.
Yeah.
Then you've hit it out of the park. But this is like, triple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Triple, maybe, I don't know, an RBI in there somewhere. It's just, it's not
a sport metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just not as, it's not the, they don't stick the landing the way that you wish that they would.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair to say.
I do like that there's no credits, though.
Yeah.
It's very bare credits with, one of the things I was watching last night does point out that after that movie that they present to you in a very realistic manner, the very first thing it says in that one chunk of credits is this movie is based on fictional. This is a work of fiction.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah.
This movie, when it came out, was the most successful independent film of all time. I can't remember what knocked it off that top point, but I think maybe Blair Witch, the most successful independent movie of all time was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, good for those Ninja Turtles.
You know, it's kind of it's obviously not exactly similar, but I find it interesting that in all three cases, Ninja Turtles, Blair Witch, this, three very similar movies.
I was going to say, I'm really looking forward to how you tie these three together.
The common denominator.
Uncanny Valley faces?
No, the turtles look better than that face at the end of this movie.
They do, you're right.
The turtles in that movie, still.
Okay.
Still. Some of the best creatures I've ever seen.
Okay.
We can talk about turtles if you want to talk about turtles.
No, I'm desperately trying to move us off of turtles because I know you will do another hour and a half about turtles.
Listeners, if you want to hear us talk about turtles, call in. we're taking your calls about turtles.
Clay's phone number
is 888-777-9311.
Damn.
But the thing they all have in common is they're all movies that were rejected by like everybody.
Yeah.
Like studios wouldn't put them out. They wouldn't take a chance on it. And interestingly enough, the thing that gets this movie out is it Jason Blum?
Yeah.
Blumhouse?
Yeah, isn't it?
I get confused because there is a comic book writer named Jordan Blum.
Oh.
And I thought that they were the same person for a long time, but they are not.
That's like the Nick Cave problem. There's a singer Nick Cave. There's an artist Nick Cave.
There's a guy in Nick Cave's band named Warren Ellis.
Ooh.
And there is a very famous comic book writer named Warren Ellis.
Now we're getting way too deep into this doppelganger realm.
When I saw that Nick Cave was writing music with Warren Ellis, I got very confused. Anyway, Jason Blum took a chance on this movie because specifically he had passed on Blair Witch. And he told himself if he ever got the chance, if he ever had something like that come down the pike again, he was going to go for it.
Yeah.
And
good advice to himself because this movie fucking nailed it.
This movie essentially single-handedly created Blumhouse.
Yeah.
And the director, Oren Peli, has worked with him on a number of different movies, producing and stuff.
The marketing for this movie, I remember, was really fun.
Yeah.
Because most of it was just audience reactions with a night vision camera of people seeing it in the theater and freaking the fuck out, which I think is one of the most clever ways to do a found footage promo for a found footage movie of people just screaming.
And that stuff was apparently all legit,
too. Yeah.
Because when they first started screening this movie, people would walk out and the people in charge were like, oh geez, people don't like the movie, and then it was like, no, they were just so scared they had to leave.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
It's love that.
The story of this movie getting not made, because obviously we don't know how that happened, but the story of getting this movie into theaters is really interesting because it basically butts up against every bad idea Hollywood has
and
manages to push through it and come out in its original form.
Yeah, and it was also
becomes a success.
One of the first, maybe not the first, but definitely one of the early movies where like social media had a huge hand in promoting this. Like Twitter existed.
Yeah.
You know, people were talking about this.
Is that true? 2009?
2009? I'm pretty sure Twitter existed.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember. At the very least, people were still using Facebook.
Yes, and people were promoting this on social media in a very organic way. Because it was not widely released everywhere, like all at once.
Yeah.
So there was hype about it because it was in enough major like metro areas that enough people were seeing it, and then there was this like internet word of mouth happening.
Yeah.
Of like, oh my God, is it coming to your city? Do you know is there going to be a release? Because like I saw it and I couldn't sleep for 3 nights. And
mm-hmm.
You were getting all of this like good organic marketing via social media that I feel like studios tried to replicate so many times after this and did not really do.
Yeah, I have found that I am a little bit more susceptible to that these days, and I can't figure out why. For instance, they really got me with the marketing campaign for Long Legs, which was like, this is the scariest movie that has ever been made. And, you know, they say that all the time about stuff, but for some reason, the way that they presented it in regards to Long Legs, I was like, oh, they must be telling me the truth.
That's really funny, actually. I liked the more. I mean, I liked Long Legs a lot. It ticks all the boxes that I have.
Let me come in your house.
Yeah, absolutely. I have some weird, freaky guy singing in an all white outfit. Gotta have one.
Have I told you my Long Legs Twin Peaks theory?
No, but I can already guess at some of it, and I love it.
Yeah, well, I don't really know if it's a theory, but there are a lot of similarities between Long Legs and Bob.
I gotta rewatch Long Legs, so.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway.
Discussion for another time.
Yes. I like lightly forgot what I was saying, but
sorry.
No, that's fine. Just that the marketing around this movie was unique and fun and felt genuine at the time. Like it really genuinely felt like people when this movie was coming to theaters in different cities, people were going to see it and then were so hyped up about it. They were just on their own going online to be like, oh shit, I saw this movie.
Yeah.
Fucking crazy. In a way that I feel like you can't trust it anymore. And pretty quickly after this era of the internet, you pretty quickly couldn't trust it. Like, stuff gets manufactured to go viral in a very specific and sort of planned way now. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't have that same grassroots feeling that this one had.
Once they started giving internet bloggers quotes on like trailers and movie posters, that's when it started to go downhill.
Yeah.
And now it's like, this is the greatest film I've ever seen, says Poopy Butt 25 on Twitter.
Or even, you know, you're listening to a podcast you really like and one of the ads is for a movie or a TV show and you're sort of like, oh, okay, like I think like the Last Podcast guys do this, or we're doing this a lot. At one point, whoever did whatever company they partnered with to do their ads was giving them a lot of like, go see the monkey or whatever. Yeah. And it made sense, you know, like they were horror movies and things that would make sense for the audience of that podcast. But they're not recommending it in those ads just because they loved the movie. They're getting paid to do it.
Right.
It's not a personal like recommendation. It's a business transaction.
Yeah.
And it's all become that. It's all like sponsored content now.
Yeah. That's why I have, especially when it comes to horror movies, I really like seeing them without really knowing much about them.
Yeah.
I did that a couple times last year and it was great. I went to, there's a movie, I can't remember if it's on the list. If it's not on the list, we're going to do it eventually. Mm-hmm. That I went to see. I literally, how did I even find out about this movie? I think I was on IMDb and I saw like a banner ad for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that looks kind of creepy.
Yeah.
I'll go see that.
Yeah.
Knew nothing else about it. Mm-hmm. A movie called Oddity.
Oh, yeah. You told me about that. I fucking still haven't seen great. That. I feel like now I need to wait for us to do it on the show. But, you know, speaking of Long Legs, you know, I saw the marketing for it in very broad terms. Yeah, I saw like some ads for it and I saw some like creepy things where it was like a code or whatever.
Sure.
And I knew like Nick Cage was going to be in it. But I didn't really know what the movie was about.
Yeah.
And similarly with Weapons.
Yep.
Like I saw some posters, I heard some promos, but I did not know what the movie was going to be about.
Yeah, I didn't watch it. That and Barbarian, I didn't never watch.
Yeah, going into those types of things, like I know Weapons is now sort of like critically beloved. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people really love that. And I know Longlegs is getting, like, heavily shit on at this point. Yeah, I mean, plenty of people were like, that was dumb. That was pointless.
Yeah,
it was just
it'll
weird.
Come back around. They always do.
And that's kind of how I feel. Yeah. But I'm glad I went into those movies without the sort of background knowledge so that I could just, like, go in and experience it and have my own opinion about it. And I think this movie, like Paranormal Activity, you could still do that.
Yeah.
Like, and I think they really used it to their advantage by making their trailers the audience reactions rather than clips from the movie. Like, you'd maybe see like one thing from the movie and then it was all just like people in a theater screaming.
Yeah.
And I think that was a very, very smart move
on
their behalf, because there aren't many pieces of this movie that you could pull out for a trailer that would be like exciting to look at.
Right.
And then the
remember that part in the trailer where Mika plays the guitar for a little bit?
Right, where like Katie brushes her teeth. Like, so you can't. The parts of the movie that are exciting are the parts you don't want to spoil.
Right, yeah.
So you kind of had to come up with a different type of marketing campaign, but they did a great job with it.
Yeah. And it's like some of the other things that this managed to push through is pretty impressive, and I give Jason Blum a lot of credit for figuring out how to play this game. Like the one that I was really impressed by was, so I think they played at Slam Dance, which is like the late night subset of Sundance.
I was gonna say, I think you mean Sundance.
No, it's part of the Sundance, but it's like
made
the
up.
Genre, the genre leg of of Sundance.
Mm-hmm.
And it was I think the crowd was like mostly investors or studio guys, and somehow based on that they got Paramount to take a flyer on it, right? But what Paramount was going to do is Paramount was going to remake it.
Oh.
Yeah. They were going to put more money into it, put some stars in it. They were going to remake it. And so Jason Blum goes, okay, well, before we do that, we should probably play it with an audience so we can see what works and stuff we can port over into the remake and see what stuff we can lose.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, yeah, that's a good idea. And he basically... Jason Blum said to the director, he's like, as soon as they watch this movie play with a crowd, they are never going to mention the word remake again.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened.
Instead
of talking about remaking it, they were talking about the publicity campaign.
Right.
Like, how are we going to market it? Because clearly it was like a slam dunk.
Yeah.
It just goes to show you that, you know, not to get too political, high-minded about
he just pulled out his soapbox
about an industry I don't work in.
He's
but
standing
like,
proudly on top of it.
So many of these movies or so many of these things get so whittled and beaten down by people who think they know better than the person who made the piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
It's just if you just have a little faith in the material, you'd be surprised at how far it can go.
But, yeah, we don't need to have everything be created by committee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they had remade it, they probably wouldn't have made 5 or 6 sequels or whatever it is. I didn't know this. I was looking up the sequels. The fourth one, which is called Paranormal Activity, The Marked Ones.
Ooh.
And does not
beyond numbers.
Yes. Does not involve, it's the first one that does not involve Katie's family.
Mm-hmm.
It takes place in like Mexico or something.
Cool.
I haven't seen it, but the ending of that movie is fucking wild.
Okay.
So what happens at the end of this movie is the main characters end up back at the, what's the short version of this? I think it's like Katie's grandmother's house. Somehow they connect everything that's happening to them with this Katie person and stuff from the other movie, cult, blah, 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 grandmother's house. And so they end up at the grandmother's house, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're running through the house, getting chased by the ghost or some shit.
Cool.
And then they go through a door
and
they end up in the kitchen of Katie and Mika's house the night that the first movie ends. So they have traveled through time and space, ended up in the kitchen, and their appearance in the kitchen is what causes Katie to scream and freak out.
Oh.
And then basically witnessing an intruder in her house in the commotion is what mm-hmm. when she kills Mika. That's fucking crazy. It's so insane that yeah. I kind of love it, but it's,
I mean,
doesn't make any sense.
I don't know how I feel about it, given that I have not watched any of the sequels to this movie. But I mean, I will give them points for creativity.
Yeah. I almost feel like that's how they sold the movie is on that final scene.
I feel like that's just like a bold choice.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, just going to fucking commit to this insane idea.
Yeah. Cool. I think I've seen the first three. Because the third one, I remember being kind of interesting because it's takes place in the 80s when Katie mm-hmm. and her sister were kids.
Okay.
And so you kind of see them interacting with this thing for the first time. But
yeah,
it's a franchise that I'm impressed that they've made so many.
Yeah.
And it actually has this weirdly dense lore to it.
See, I don't know how I feel about that, though, because I feel like this movie, its success, in my opinion, is based off of its simplicity.
Yeah.
Not just in terms of like stylistically, but like plot wise, where it is just this young couple and this unexplained shit is happening in their house and they are trying to figure out what the fuck is going on. And mm-hmm. that's the movie. Like yeah. there's a little bit of extra lore within that movie where Katie's talking about, this thing's been haunting me since I was a kid and it's attached to me specifically. It doesn't really matter where I go, but it's never been this bad before and I don't know what's causing it to get so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much all you need, you know? Like, yeah. this movie throws in the Ouija board stuff and him putting together the letters from the Ouija board to find the girl on the internet who was also tormented by a demon.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't really need that.
No.
Like, they could have left that out, and I don't think it would have... I don't think the movie would have suffered if you never got to see that great, 2002 website. But I think keeping it pretty simple is actually what makes it scary.
Yeah.
Because there's no explanation. There's, like, why is this thing after Katie? Big shrug. Who knows? Just...
It always has been.
It decided, and that's what... it's gonna do now. And
because she doesn't take better care of her photographs,
maybe
leaves you with the question asked so succinctly by our friend Nicolas Cage in the movie The Wicker Man: how to get burned. But yeah, I think I feel like you end up kind of at a weird crossroads, though, because if you want to mm-hmm. make this into a franchise, your options are make every movie separate from the first one, then you're just kind of doing the same thing over. What's the?
Yeah, no, totally. I understand that. Like, to make anything a franchise, yeah. you have to just keep building on what you have and adding to it. But that makes it less scary to me.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, as you go, if it turns into it's a specific family that this happens to, or it's a cult,
mm-hmm.
or whatever.
You're telling me learning Freddy is the bastard son of 100 maniacs makes it less scary
Isn't
for you?
1,000 maniacs? I don't know.
I don't know what the capacity of that particular asylum was.
But yeah, just in this specific type of movie,
mm-hmm.
I find that less is more.
Yeah.
Where it is just like, we don't fucking know. We don't know, and that means that there's not a whole hell of a lot we can do. So it avoids those pitfalls of, some of the other movies where people just keep coming up with increasingly convoluted plans on how to exorcise or defeat the demon, and it starts just getting real silly.
Yeah.
This doesn't ever do that, because it really is just like, what if this happened to two normal ass people?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same thing that makes The Exorcist work.
Yep.
Which is also weighed down to the bottom of the ocean by unnecessary lore in the sequels.
Yes.
But yeah, I think, how do you feel about the placement on the list? It is, what did I say, 151? Higher, lower, take it off.
That feels like pretty good placement to me. I think this movie successfully scares so many people that I would definitely keep it on the list.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really good early example of the found footage genre and sort of its initial explosion, after the first couple trickles of other movies like Blair Witch.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's like, I don't know. I kind of wonder if it has staying power.
I feel like it's kind of been forgotten.
Yeah.
Because the I would be really curious to know how many people who are I'm going to say younger than you.
Yeah.
Would even really know this franchise.
Yeah.
Because it is so indicative of a specific era of movie making.
Yeah.
That is kind of over for the most part. They made a sequel like the fourth or fifth movie a couple of years ago.
I think a new one's coming out in a couple of years.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
but the newest one in 2021, I think it went straight to Paramount Plus or something.
Yeah.
It's not a found footage movie. It's just a regular movie. And it's like, well, what are we doing here?
You know?
It's like when they did the second Blair Witch movie and it was just a movie about the movie that
happened. Yeah. I do really think these types of movies have like a diminishing returns.
Yeah.
You know, like it works the first time. And then when you try to, you know, add to the lore or adjust the style or update it for the modern day.
Yeah.
It just doesn't quite work the same as the original piece did. And then there are these franchises. I mean, with a lot of franchises, to be honest, once you get past parts 1, 2 and maybe 3,
mm-hmm.
it's usually pretty downhill from there.
Yeah. Generally.
Like these franchises that just get so long. And
Mr.
so
James
many.
Cameron would like to have a word with you when Avatar 4 comes out.
He can call me up. I'd love to talk to him.
He's just going to want to talk about dirt biking.
That sounds fun.
I guess.
I wonder if he's a MotoGP guy or if he's just dirt bikes.
I don't know. This sounds made up to me.
Okay.
MotoGP, that was a flip phone in the late 90s, right?
Yeah, they have one in this movie.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I would say 151 is a good place.
Yeah,
I agree. I think that this movie has potential to be one that is rediscovered by younger people in a handful of years, because I think it will be enough time has passed or will have passed where it has that inherent. I'm not saying this because I think it's as good as the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but it has that inherent sort of time capsule griminess to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I worry that it's a tough watch for people who are so accustomed to like short form video.
Yeah, if you got a phone anywhere
in
arm's length,
yeah,
you're not going to pay attention to
it's
this movie.
It's really, and I don't mean that in a sort of like kids these days way. I just mean we are all so programmed that the minute we have 15 seconds of quiet, we all pick up our phones.
Yeah.
We all do it. I do it. Like, it's really hard to resist the urge in a movie where there is going to be like 2 full minutes of a girl silently standing in the dark by a bed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really hard to resist the urge to just be like, how many notifications right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The hell was I going to say?
I ruined your train of thought this time.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's the funny thing about that is, well, I know what I was going to say. It's just a stupid joke. I was going to say, watching this movie for kids is going to be like everybody on Earth watching Skinamarink.
Which I still have a weird affection for and kind of want to watch.
I would like to watch that one at home again.
Yeah.
We won't put you guys through it. Don't worry.
Yeah.
But I was to say, having a phone on you while watching a movie is something that it's like a huge hypocritical moment for me. Because I remember in the earlier days when they were first starting to do this like second screen thing, and it's like, well, when people are watching the movie, they can scan this thing on the TV,
God,
and it will bring them trivia. And I was like, who the fuck is gonna want to pull out their phone while they're watching? And what do I do? Every single thing I watch,
you're like, wait, who is
pull
that?
It up on IMDb.
Who is that guy? What
oh,
else
yeah,
was he in?
That
was
guy.
He in whatever?
Yeah.
And then you're immediately.
Did you know
Googling.
Her husband died?
Yeah. Hey, he's 6'3". He's really tall.
Yeah. It's and it's like. That's one of the big things that I think is going away with people not going to the movies.
Yeah, I was.
There used to be, you could get rid of that stuff, but now even now, so many people just pull their phones out the movies.
I was gonna say we're getting old fashioned in the sense that I think we are definitely people who are old enough to be of a generation where taking your phone out in the theater is really, really bad etiquette.
Yeah,
and so when we are in the theater with our friends or with a group of, you know, say the other theater goers are in our peer group, people tend to be pretty respectful, like especially if we're going to some of the independent theaters in the area. People tend to be pretty respectful and leave the phones in their pockets and whatever. But I, you know, if you're at an AMC and you're seeing the newest DC or Marvel movie, everybody still has their phone out.
Did I tell you about when I went to see Joker 2?
Oh, was this the one where someone was like translating the whole time?
No, that was Lord of the Rings.
Got it.
That was there was a woman, a Hispanic woman, and her much more Hispanic mother sitting directly behind me.
That's racist.
And the mother clearly didn't speak English.
Yeah.
And so they're watching the movie, and at the end of every scene, I would hear the mother ask the daughter a question, which I can only imagine was, what happened?
Yeah.
And then the daughter then would explain in Spanish what happened in that scene in Lord of the Rings. And then the mother would go, for the whole movie. No, this was, I went to see Joker. I may have mentioned this before. I went to see Joker 2 and there was a family of all the movies to bring your kids to. Sitting in like the last row of the theater. And they had like a 5-year-old with them.
Ooh.
Who had an iPad that they were using without headphones.
Oh.
So for the whole movie.
Come on.
Just like just it within my earshot was just like.
That's
like, you gotta be fucking
kidding.
That's
really fucked up. That's really, I feel like most people would consider that extremely fucked up.
Yeah. You know, we can finish this rant about phones and movies and then get out of here. Alamo Drafthouse, did you hear this? They're planning on moving away from writing stuff down and having it be you order on your phone.
I thought the whole
thing with Alamo
was if you pull out your phone, you
throw it out. That's what happens when you get bought by a big fucking company. Support your local indie theater, people.
Please.
Anyway,
please.
That's going to do it for Paranormal Activity.
Mm-hmm.
We will not be covering Paranormal Activity, the marked ones, on our sequels session on
That's homework Patreon. For you all to do independently.
Yes. But if you would like to help support the show and follow us as we go on our sequel journey, head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile. And I'm going to hit the randomizer. Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop. If I'm being honest, this isn't really a random one.
Oh.
But the Academy Award nominations just came out today.
Oh.
And with more nominations than any film in history.
Oh.
Number 12.
Yes.
Sinners.
Yes.
So we're going to do Sinners next time. Hopefully
right
in time for it to not win any
awards. Oh, it better. I'm going to be so mad if that movie doesn't win. All right, anyway.
It's pretty good field this year.
Damn.
Any other year, I would say it's a shoo-in to clean up, but I don't know about this year. Anyway, thank you guys for supporting the show. Thank you, Amanda.
Thanks, Clay.
See you next time.
Bye, everyone.